Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money Episode 1630, Why a Man is Not a Financial Plan, with Maggie Jandro, Certified Financial Planner at Jandro Wealth.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
The first place to find out what you all have together is your tax return. So ask for last year's tax return. And if you don't know how to read it, there are so many professionals that will help you decipher. And you're going to see all of your investments, all of your assets, all of your debts on there.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. It's Valentine's week. It's also my birthday week. So I'm kicking things off with a show topic that is near and dear. Why it is vital for women to have their own money. Everyone should have their own money. But this message, I find, needs to be more emphasized for women who sometimes feel it's not their strength or their role to make money or manage money in a relationship. The impetus for this episode was actually a New York Times essay. You may have read it. You may have seen me share it online. It's called Never Rely on a Man's Money. And the writer, Maggie Smith, captures how her divorce was a shock that led her to a new vow. She writes, the vow is financial independence. So we're going to get into that New York Times piece and also bring on our guest today, Maggie Jandro. She's a former guest on So Money, partner and financial advisor at Jandro Wealth. She's one of my favorite financial planners. And she and I share a common love for making women rich. So I definitely wanted to have her on the show to pick apart this issue. We talk about what she sees in her practice. Oftentimes, women clients coming to her post-divorce with financial regrets. What are those regrets? What are the absolute facts women need to know about their financial lives? And how can we plan for and sometimes insist upon more financial transparency and equality in our relationships? Here's Maggie Jandro. Oh my gosh, I had to have you stop talking before I hit record because you were giving me all the good stuff. Maggie Jandro, welcome to So Money. We're going to get into it. We're going to talk about one of our favorite topics, which is why a man is not a financial plan. A bumper sticker you have owned since the 90s, probably. whenever you were in high school. I don't mean to age you. I was in the 90s in high school. Welcome, my friend.
Thanks. I'm so happy to be back. And this is my favorite topic. And I love following you because I know it's your favorite topic. So let's get into it.
It's going to go on my grave. A man is on a financial plan. I actually recently posted on Instagram one of my reels. I'm really into like hot takes these days. I'm in my 40s. I've been doing this for a long time. I have a lot of opinions. It's time to share them. Mm. And Instagram's kind of like a good place to do that. And I just put up this like, I said, basically, this is what I said. If you are someone who's in a relationship, I don't care if you're a man, a woman, I don't care who you're in a relationship with, but if that partner of yours is telling you, I'll handle the money, honey, don't worry about it. I have friends who don't even know how to write a check. Like they need money. They're like, oh, how do I PayPal you? I have to ask my husband. What? If that's happening and also, and or your partner does not want you working, you need to stop everything, grab a notebook, and watch Sleeping with the Enemy.
I loved it. That's so true.
It's like the 2024 way of saying a man is not a financial plan. And I have to say, we have context for this. We actually, both you and I, we like to DM each other a lot. We talk on the go. We both were obsessed with this Modern Love piece in the New York Times. It is a journal, a diary basically of this woman whose name is Maggie Smith, who wrote about why she's never relying on a man's money. She goes on to say, divorce was a shock that led me to a new vow, financial independence. I want to just read the first couple of sentences in her essay just to kind of set the stage for us. And then I want to hear from you, Maggie, because you work with women professionally as their financial advisor. You see this not just Maggie's story here. I know your name is Maggie. It's going to get a little confusing. Maggie's the woman who wrote the essay in the New York Times. You're Maggie Jandro. But this is what Maggie said. The moment I knew I would never again have a joint bank account, I was driving home in a hard rain with a small butterscotch lollipop in my mouth. Ooh. I would take the sweetness where I could find it. Nearly an hour before, I had logged into the savings account I shared with my husband to discover that half of the savings had been withdrawn in one chunk right after the last big argument my husband and I had. I called him, and I'll never forget what he said. I have goosebumps. He said his lawyer had recommended it. He was a lawyer, and now he had a lawyer? This was also a shock. I hung up, wiped the mess of mascara from under my eyes, and drove through the rain to our local bank to withdraw the rest. My two children, oblivious in the back seat. When I left, clutching courtesy lollipops for us three, I knew my marriage was over. I knew I would need to use my half of the savings to hire a lawyer. And I vowed, a loaded verb choice, I know, given the context, never to be financially dependent on a man again. This is harrowing that she's a mom and she has two kids. And so often, well, I don't have to guess what's going to happen after this. She's probably going to have to pay more to raise these kids on her own as it happens, given the kind of man she's married or was married to. So tell us why this essay really struck a chord with you, Maggie. I just want to hear like your initial thoughts when you read this.
It struck a chord with me because unfortunately, so many women that come to work with me, because I do have an additional specialty in divorce and finance, are in this position where they come to me and they've said, you know, I spent my life raising our kids. That was my job. And as we know, so many people don't see that as a job still in our modern day society. And I just didn't have time, or I wasn't interested, or to your point, more extreme, my husband told me not to be interested, which I think is the big red flag, right? In our finances. And so they come saying, one case, a woman, retirement money was drained and spent on some nefarious things. In another case, you know, 70 years old, together for so long, all of a sudden, I just don't want to be married. And they're lost, right? And then what also strikes me in these like divorce cases is I think folks are grasping for any sort of stability. And often it means that they want to keep their family home. And often that's just not the right choice because of everything else they're giving up. But women haven't been attending their financial advisor meetings or haven't been looking into accounts or haven't been listening to your podcast and educating themselves on Roth IRAs and traditional IRAs, and they don't understand what they're giving up, even when they're in a divorce and they're trying to, you know, split up assets. So hearing that story that, you know, this woman honestly was in a better situation because she actually had a password to her joint bank account.
Right.
Some people come to me and they don't even know how to access their joint bank accounts.
So here's what I want to talk about with you today. I want to talk about the things that we, at minimum, as women or any partner in a relationship who feels out of it financially, what are the minimum things we need to know so that we're not, I mean, the triage may be inevitable. Like you may get divorced and there may be some things that you don't know. And I mean, it happens to the best of us. But in advance, how can we protect ourselves? What are some red flags that your partner may not be? Here's another hot take. I feel like if your partner is insisting that you are not involved in the finances or that you shouldn't work for whatever reason, like not because, you know, I don't want to, that's a tricky thing. Like I get it. Some people don't work outside of the home. Fine. But if someone's like insisting upon that, that's weird, right? I feel like that's a huge red flag. I'm like, this person, how much do they really care about your autonomy and your independence? That's not what I think is like a good, loving partnership.
Absolutely.
Call me crazy.
So yeah, that's the biggest red flag. Not wanting to be in, having you be involved, whether it's the meeting with the financial advisor, having online login or passwords to all the accounts. And like you said, sort of forcing you to stay home. Like, and you've talked about this, and I totally agree with you that there's a cost to staying at home. That's not just the salary. It's retirement and Social Security. And you kind of have to think about, I think you said this, like your household income, not just my husband makes this or my wife makes that.
Yes.
Right. But that's like another topic. But if there's an insistence that we're not even going to have this conversation about you working outside the home, any sort of, I mean, that's control and manipulation, right? Those are all red flags. I would immediately say, nope, I want to be involved. I want the passwords. I want you to show me what we have. And I want to go to our meetings with our advisor and our accountant. The first place to find out what you all have together is your tax return. So ask for last year's tax return. And if you don't know how to read it, there are so many professionals that will help you decipher. And you're going to see all of your investments, all of your assets, all of your debts on there. But I would immediately ask for that if there's any sort of hesitation of letting you be involved in that.
So many people don't even know what their partners make.
Yeah.
And the tax return will obviously tell you that. But it's also a great place to look and see, does this line up with what my husband or my wife or my partner does for a living? You know, if they're claiming too little or a lot, that's also interesting and worth investigating. Because here's the thing about the tax return. If you're both signing it, you're both on the hook.
100%. And I've seen that situation where, oh, I just signed it because I trust and love my husband. Couple years later, all of a sudden you're seeing, oh my gosh, there's so much debt that we both owe because I signed this, right?
Right.
I'm on the hook as well. So you got to know what you're signing. You got to know what you're standing on.
Now, in this essay in the New York Times, Maggie Smith, she opens by talking about like, oh, we had this joint account. That was a big mistake. I don't know if that was the mistake. I think that joint accounts are useful. What is your advice on how to manage the money, the income, the savings, the investments? Generally, we agree that there should be like your account, my account, our account. But can you get a little bit more specific about that and how to avoid, could she have avoided her husband depleting half their bank account? I don't think so.
So what's interesting in divorce is it depends on what sort of state you're in. So there's community property states and then common law property. And in community property states, you can name them. In those states, everything ends up in a divorce for the most part. There are, of course, exceptions to every rule, being split 50-50. So if his intention was to get a divorce, his lawyer probably wasn't that incorrect by saying you could take 50% of this joint account, leave 50% for your wife, because that's probably how it's going to be split. Mm. So, you know, I can see maybe why that advice was given. But I agree with you. I don't think the joint account was the problem, or necessarily that he was depleting 50% of the money if he's intending to get a divorce. It was obviously their lack of communication. And I think that's key here. But I agree with you. I usually say have your individual accounts where you put in your own money, even to do something sweet for each other, like buy each other gifts as a surprise, right? And then have that money also money for, hey, I need to get out of this situation. And I know I have something that I can live on for a little bit. And then the joint account should really go to joint expenses. So vacations, utilities, bills, the kids. And a lot of people do this differently. If both folks are working, then, you know, maybe they'll do it as a percentage of salary, right? Because I don't think it's necessarily fair to be putting in the same dollar amount if your husband's making three times as much as you. That's unrealistic. But I think I'd be having open and honest conversations above all, regardless of how you choose to do this, is key. And I always say set up a monthly meeting to do it. Don't make it at the house. Make it your local library, coffee shop, wherever you're comfortable speaking about your finances. Because if you're in the house, you're going to get distracted by the kids, by the dishes, whatever else is going on at home. And keep that meeting. Make it important. Go get lunch after and talk about it. Be open and communicative so everyone is on the same page.
Brilliant.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So, finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/somoney. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. You know, I think that we often assume that the partner who is making less or not an income is typically the one who buries their head in the sand or isn't involved with the money stuff. But I've found too that women in particular who make as much or more are also the ones to be like, oh, I'm not really good at managing the money, so I'll let my partner handle it. It's very complex. It's multi-layered. Part of it is like they're fighting against this like gender role situation expectation.
Or they're managing so much of the money or budget or finances at work that they're sort of exhausted and they're like, I don't really want to look at my mortgage payment. You know what I mean? You take that off.
I've heard that. I've also heard that, you know, I'm really good at making money, but I'm not quote unquote good at managing the money. Again, a sort of false narrative that you may have been raised with because we live in a society that devalues women and also their potential in all realms, especially financial potential. So if this is you and you are maybe even making as much or more than your partner and you're still feeling insecure about your role as far as making financial decisions in the household and managing the money. I mean, you must see this.
Yeah.
What are the conversations you're having with your clients who are in that camp?
So I'm really education-based and that's or education forward. So if that's the case, I tend to find that it's not a matter of not wanting to, it's a matter of, oh, I think they, my partner, know more than I do. And to your point, it's inherently men have been raised to know more about the stock market. It's been passed down generationally. I think Sally Krawchuk was the one that said, you know, even look at the jargon that's used. It's always like sports references, even the bull and the bear symbols. And so I don't think it's been accessible to women for a very long time. Think about it. We couldn't even get our own mortgage without a male partner's signature until recently. So I think it's a lack of comfort with the jargon, the tools, the financial literacy that's out there. So certainly there's so many resources out there where you can start, whether it's your podcast, which I think is excellent, or you know, online tools. But I get it. When you're a busy working person, as we both are, sometimes you don't want to be doing the research on a Saturday morning. So find an expert that you're comfortable with and book an hour-long meeting with them and just be like, what don't I know? What questions am I not asking? What do I need to know? And this stuff, the jargon makes it seem complex, but it doesn't have to be on a very basic level. And honestly, once you're comfortable with the language, the terminology, the accounts available to you, you probably will want to be more a part of it. And I've seen that. I've seen, you know, single women clients who came and said, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have to do something. And I swear, you know, many years later, they're teaching their friends what a 401k is. Mm-hmm. So I think it's truly just that this hasn't been passed on generationally between women. It's always been passed generationally between men. And so it's not that people don't want to do it. I think people don't know where to start, don't know what questions to ask.
Yes. Just start. Just find one person you can talk to. And it may not even be, could be a one-dimensional relationship where you're just listening to this podcast and you're learning through this person's interviews. And to go back to Maggie's essay, I want to read this next part of her essay, which is like the aftermath and her coming to this understanding that her financial life matters and she needs to take control over her financial literacy. She said, from that day forward, which is the day that she, you know, had that episode with her husband and the divorce, I was determined to become the adult I wished I had been in my marriage, to be the CFO of my own life. It's empowering to know what's in my accounts, she says, even if I don't always love the numbers. My short-term alimony ended a couple years ago, but I'm still receiving child support. It helps, in addition to my income from writing, teaching, editing, and public speaking. It's empowering to pay my own bills and see where the money is going. It's empowering to meet with my financial advisor, even if my outlook for retirement is grim. The stress of knowing is preferable to the stress of not knowing. At least if I have the information, I can act on my own behalf. This goes back to my book, A Healthy State of Panic. It's like, which fear do you favor? Which you know, do you want to be the person who's afraid of the unknown?
Or do you want to be that it could be,
or
right?
How bad it could be? Or do you want to be afraid of like the certainty?
The reality. This is my reality. I now know it. And what changes can I make to change it?
Exactly. You can create a plan. A lot of people want to know, when am I ready to work with a financial planner? This is an open-ended question. I feel like I want you to answer this. And I know you're a little biased, but I do refer people to you and I trust you. I want to know, you know, how you think a relationship between client and financial advisor works best. What's the roles and responsibilities of each person, and when you are actually ready?
You also have to define, what does a financial planner mean to you, or what are you looking from a financial planner? Because I think the industry has changed so much over the last 25 years, I'll say. You know, prior to, it was like you couldn't buy your own stocks, bonds, mutual funds yourself. So you had to go to, quote unquote, a financial advisor, but really they were brokers, right? They bought you an investment, you paid them a commission, and that was that. And that's the way you were able to do it. Now there's so many things that you can, you know, self-invest or self-plan. If you are a self-starter like that, go that route at first and see how it works out for you. Certainly, it's not as expensive, right? I would say a financial advisor in today's day and age, the way I define myself, is not just someone to manage your investments, but someone to truly help you and empower you to be the CFO of your life, or maybe to be that CFO for you if you want to outsource it. And so that includes running a financial plan, which means, what is your entire picture? And what are all of your goals, the small and the big ones? And what are we going to do to achieve them, and working together to achieve them? So really a coach in many ways. And then if you are also going to invest with that advisor, those investments should align with your values, your goals, your financial plan, not just, I want to make as much money as possible, right? Though, of course, we all do. Who doesn't? But, you know, we have to make sure we're investing you in line with what you value. So I think for somebody that's hearing this saying, yeah, I've tried to do it on my own, I'm not really sure if I'm successful in it, I don't really have a plan, that could be a good time to speak with an advisor. And again, I think an honest advisor is going to say, you know what, you are doing a great job, keep going. Or, you know what, here we can help you, and here's how. You want them to be a fiduciary, so putting your interests ahead of theirs or their business. And you want them to be really transparent about fees, right? I've had people come to me saying, I have no idea what I'm even paying. And so our practice is very fee transparent. That's one of the first things we talk about, just so we all are on the same page. And I never want someone to leave me because they didn't know what I was paying, right, or what they were paying. So I think it really just depends on where you are in your life and in your financial picture.
Thank you for that. The point about fees is important. I think people are afraid to ask, even, you know, and never, you know, you don't assume, because I think we hear like, oh, it costs this and it's always this percentage of your underlying assets. But I feel like it's worth having that conversation to see if there's like flexibility or what we can do. Because if I was a financial advisor and someone comes to me and maybe they're not, you know, they're not wealthy yet, obviously that's why they're here. They're trying to build the wealth. I'm not going to shortcut them. I'm not going to dismiss them. I'm here. This is a potentially like decades long relationship. So to be able to meet them where they're at is not just in the interest of the client, but also the financial advisor who's looking to build those relationships and those long-term client relationships.
Absolutely. I think that you're right. Ask the question. I've had many moments where I thought, why didn't I ask them what their fee was? I have to go back and, you know, for different services and ask. It should be one of your top questions. And somebody who's certain in their value that they can provide, shouldn't be squirrely about it either. And then always, always, always get everything in writing, especially if it comes to making payments for any professional. You know, don't just take a verbal or a handshake as enough. Get it in writing. If it's not in writing, it's never been said. That's my father-in-law. That's his, one of his pearls of wisdom, and it sticks with me.
You said something earlier, Maggie, about if you are that partner in the relationship who feels in the dark and you want, you know, get these things in order, like get this answer, get involved in the meetings. How do you do that emotionally? Like, that's really hard. I think talking about money and then also inserting yourself financially in a relationship when that hasn't really been your disposition, your role, or your expectation, it can feel like it's coming from out of left field. And so how can couples do this? How can the person do this in the relationship so that it doesn't blow up?
Yeah, I think it has to be coming from I statements, right? Versus you, like, you've hid this from me, or you have all the passwords. You know, just, it could be as easy as, hey, I listened to this great podcast and it got me thinking, I don't actually know where things are. And I just want to be more involved in our financial picture. And where do you think that's a good place to start? I think a good place is maybe I can just attend our next financial advisor or our next accounting meeting. Yeah. I think coming at it, I mean, that's genuine, that's authentic, that's soft. Again, if your partner responds poorly to that, you got to dig into that, because most partners I see want their spouses involved more. They just don't want to push them. Oh, they're tired. They've had a long day. Maybe they just don't care about this. And we're kind of dividing and conquering here. So I've seen people say that, and it's gone really well. Their spouses are actually thrilled because they, you know, it's kind of a lot of pressure to have all of the finances on one person.
Yes. I will be honest and share a little anecdote about when I was first married, and I felt that way. I kind of had a discussion early on when we weren't even married yet. We were living together. We had bought this home. We were planning our wedding, and I was making all these decisions. And he had kind of deferred to me. I was interested in making all the decisions, frankly. But it got to a point where I was like, I'm all alone on this island of breadwinner. And while I feel confident in my ability to make good choices, I don't want to make a mistake and be the one holding the bag. I don't want to be the only one responsible for the upsets and the failures either, because there will be some. I want us to be all, both of us, be accountable for all of the good and all of the potential bad. And so I presented it like that. I was like, this is a lot of pressure. And then what it led my husband to reveal was that, you know, yes, I get that. And to be honest, like, I've been a little passive because as someone who makes less, I felt as though maybe my vote or my veto power wasn't as much. Interesting, right? I think that was so honest of him to share that. It's not a gender designation. Like, any, I think money does symbolize power in our culture. And then when you bring that to a relationship, which I think is a mistake, but here we are, we tend to think that whatever we make, it's like a measure of our power in the relationship. And so whoever's making less is going to maybe feel that way. And as a result, silence themselves, not speak up, not feel empowered. And so if that's you listening, I want to tell you, like, I don't care if you're making $0 outside of the home. Your time, your thoughts, your inputs, your goals, all of it matters equally to your partners.
And Farnoosh, it's always amazing because I feel like we have these kindred paths, like daughter of immigrants, and our money stories are so similar. And same story here. I'm a financial advisor. So naturally, my husband, who's in biotech, he has his PhD in, you know, biology, he's like, I default to you because this is your job. But similarly to you, I'm really tired of doing my job all day. Yeah. And I would love some mutual input in our decision making. And so very similar, we had a very similar conversation. We both have those monthly meetings now together. This is true of anyone who's married to someone who owns their own business too. That's really complex, and your business might be worth X, but that's not all necessarily available to spend tomorrow. And I think that's something, if there's a listeners out there whose spouses have their own business, definitely dig into the business and understand how much is the business actually bringing home. Are there any debts involved? because you may feel that things are going very well. And I'm not saying they're not, but it might be that you're not as liquid or the money's not as available to you as you think. And so I think that's where we came from, where he was like, you're an advisor, you know what you're doing. It's not wrong, but also he needs to understand what our business looks like, because in the end, it is our business in the sense that he's supporting us in a different way while I'm growing this, you know?
Yes, great way to look at it. Maggie, tell us how we can learn more about you and find you.
Sure. So our website is johndrowwealth.com. That's J-O-H-N-D-R-O-W wealth.com. So there's two W's in a row. Follow us on social. We post every day, and hopefully it's a great way for you to learn little tidbits. We try to keep it short and sweet and easy to digest. And then if someone wants to email me directly with questions, I'm Maggie, M-A-G-G-I-E, at johndrowwealth.com.
Thank you so much. Thank you, really, for indulging me.
No, I mean, like you said, we direct message each other. And I think it started with Tradwives, which you did a great podcast on that. And then this message and your book's been phenomenal. I've been reading it too. So all in all, definitely passionate about this topic and so happy to hear you have a platform to talk about it.
Yes, yes. Well, until next time, thank you so much. Thanks so much to Maggie for joining us. You can learn more about Maggie at johndrowwealth.com. And I've also linked the New York Times piece in the show notes. Thanks to everybody who has signed up for the So Money Members Club. Today is the last day to sign up, and we have already reached capacity, but I've left the door open for any last minute folks who want to join us and get in on the financial action. We have two workshops planned for you this month. I'm going to lead two workshops on how to earn more money in 2024. You can get access to last month's sold out investing workshop. And we also have a live office hour this month where you can drop in, drop by, and ask me whatever's on your money mind. And this is going to be happening every single month. New workshops, live office hours, and so much engagement within the community. It's really exciting to see. You can go to somoneymembers.com to check us out. And today is the last day to sign up. I'll see you back here on Wednesday, Valentine's Day. And until then, I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.